I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talked to New York stand-up comedian, writer, and actor, Lance Weiss. You might have seen him on your TV or heard his voice somewhere, or perhaps you saw him performing stand-up comedy at a show. We talk about his OCD. We talk about his history. We talk about pursuing your dreams and investing in yourself. And we get into some pretty good psychology, I think, that you'll hear pretty much in the first half. Okay, so I hope you enjoy this episode. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a filmmaker, musician, podcaster, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments, because they have an app that can make your life simpler. Okay, check out the show notes for links and information, and enjoy this episode. Lance Weiss, you're a veteran of the New York comedy scene, and you were the face of AT&T.
Wait, can we start over? I'm serious. I want to start over real quick.
Lance Weiss, thanks for being here. You are a veteran of the New York comedy scene, and you were the face of AT&T, which I recently found out.
At one point, I was in an AT&T commercial.
Uh-huh. You were like almost the Sprint guy. You were the rival to the
Sprint guy. Kind of, I suppose. Yeah, I wouldn't say I would go... I'm not as well known as... I don't even know who saw it.
Yeah, that guy kind of made his living off of...
Oh, that guy's a multimillionaire now.
He is, huh?
Oh, my God. Yeah, what, the Sprint... What, would you say Sprint or Verizon?
Well, who's
that? He moved, yeah. Dude, that guy's worth probably like $20 million.
Yeah.
The amount of money... When you're the flow, progressive...
Yeah.
Unreal money.
And he played it way better than Jared from Subway.
Yeah. Well, the greatest thing is who fucked up that contract for Verizon, because that's a horrible no-no. You can't jump brands like that. That means someone didn't look at his contract and they were like, holy shit, it's done and we didn't put a clause in here.
It was brilliant marketing from Sprint.
Yeah, and then he jumped. But whoever did that legal work was I also don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that's horrific. Like, that should have been a clause. Like, you did Verizon, now you're Verizon forever. Like, that's...
How
that, and they, Verizon should have kept paying him whatever that is to hold him as a Verizon, but it ran out.
Yeah.
I know I'm ranting, but
well,
yeah.
Weird thing is that Quiznos was trying to get Jared to switch over.
So funny. Yeah, it's so funny. I love there aren't enough dudes that look like that. Like, there's not
right.
Millions of dudes that could do that role. It's so stupid.
There's got to be somebody.
Yeah. Do you ever go on any commercial auditions?
No.
I've been going on for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And I booked two on camera and two... voiceovers, four commercials in 10 years.
How many auditions?
Hundreds. Hundreds. Like probably 600 maybe.
Yeah.
It could be a little high, but I mean, at one point I was going on four a day. It was like my day job.
Right.
I was going, you name it, I auditioned for it. But like the rate, but the point is, anyway, if you get them, it can fucking make your career. You know what I mean? Like those, why did I go on this rant? Oh, the point is, one, they're stupid. Like a lot of them, like anyone, like you and I might play slightly different roles depending on what it is, but we also might play friend, you know, 25 to 45. Like anybody can show up and just sit there and drink glass of water.
I was told I should because I can be ethnically ambiguous looking.
You're probably pretty good for it, actually. Yeah.
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 See, when I lived in LA, I think I did go on one or two, and it was just so humiliating and seemed like such a waste of time.
How did you go on it?
Very disempowering. You just go there. It was like a big casting call, just tons of people there, and you feel like...
No, it sucks.
It's just random.
So if you have... But the difference is if you have a good agent,
right?
Like you'll get... Like I get like a call time. It's like 3:10.
Because you have an agent.
Yeah. I show up at 3. I read the side. Here's like a couple lines. Usually I show up... 3:10 is my time. I show up at 3. I read what I got to do. I'm in there. Like if they're on time at 3:10. Sometimes they're behind because it just happens. But let's just say 3:20.
Right.
And then I'm out by 3:30. Like it's like... And everyone you're with is pro. All the actors are like good looking people who like have good agents and have their show. You're in. It's like... Is there anything doing like a comedy open mic or like being at like the Comedy Cellar or something like that?
Right. I recently got passed at a LOL Comedy Club. And
great.
I've been really enjoying having an exact spot.
It's great.
Time.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
such a better use of your time than even going to a bar show where you could sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, like not even knowing when you're going on because there you don't even know.
Yeah.
So tell me, where are you from? You're not a New Yorker, I could tell.
No, I'm originally from Georgia. South Georgia, small town, 1 hour south of Savannah.
Okay. So you're Southern.
Yeah.
Southerner.
Or 1 hour north of Jacksonville, Florida.
How come I'm not hearing any accent?
It's on the coast. God, hold on. I got to write some shit down. My brain is not. Someone's got to write stuff down.
Just like what, so, adjectives?
Just everything. My brain does not operate. Let's see.
Do you want to pull up a list of adjectives?
No, I'm fucking losing it. Hold on. Okay.
Well, you do this interesting thing because this is several years ago. I don't know if you remember, but... I think I wrote you a message, and then I ran into you at a comedy show, and you pulled out a notebook, and you said, oh, I'm sorry I didn't get back to you.
Yeah.
Look, it's in my notebook to get back to you. So instead of responding, which I found odd, instead of responding to my message, which would have taken 20 seconds, you pulled out your notebook, wrote it down in your notebook as a to-do, and then was, I guess, eventually going to do it, which you eventually did.
Yeah, my brain doesn't operate it's a highly functioning brain when it operates, and then other times like could not be dumber. It could not operate slower and dumber and more like backwards.
Well, you get everything done, but not in the most efficient way. Is that...
Yes and no. I'm more efficient, I think, than at times than like maybe I don't want to say an average, but everybody's got their own. I'm highly efficient, but then there's other times where I can't. I mean, we all are. Like, and then there's times I can't even send an email because my brain won't allow me.
Right. What is that? What is that?
I have OCD.
Like?
Did we ever talk about this?
We have OCD?
Yeah.
You have OCD?
Yeah. Did we ever talk about it?
We grazed on it.
I mean, I've been in and out of therapy since I was 18.
Okay.
And I'll be 35 next month. So how was it 17 years of like every kind of therapist you name it, like PhD students all the way up to like some of the leading like OCD people in the world.
So what is it? I mean, OCD, I imagine, has many different faces.
Sure.
What does yours look like?
Yeah, my whole life is run by it. Like every decision I make is run by it.
Do you have to like put your arm on a building and make sure that it's that you're like grounded, that kind of OCD?
No, but shit that dumb.
Yeah.
Stuff literally that dumb.
Is there certain things you have to do before you leave the apartment?
Everything. Every little action I do is rooted in OCD.
Uh-huh.
And people, sometimes you can see some of them and sometimes you 90% of them most people never see because it's just the way you're doing it.
Is it something that you just try to keep secret?
I don't mind. I'll tell people about it. I'll talk about it. Like, there's a lot of weird little habits and weird little routines that are completely useless. Mm-hmm. But the difference, I guess the advantage is when it's, when it works, it's highly detailed and highly, I mean, so, you know, I ran a show for many years. I co-ran a show. And one of the reasons of its success amongst a lot of
the
things,
Gandhi show at
because
Lucky
I'm a
Jacks.
Fucking animal when it comes to like detail and getting it right and doing it correctly and do it, you know. That's one of the reasons. My co-producer obviously helped a ton too, but like my like attention to shit like that is like I'll put it up against anybody's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it pays off in that sense.
Yeah, but then it inhibits you, it fucks you in other ways.
Why? Because you have to do so many of these minute details to just leave the apartment?
Yeah, dumb shit. I was late here by 7 minutes. Pisses me off.
But you texted that you're parking 5 minutes to one.
But I had to do some weird shit to get in here properly.
Well, what do you mean weird shit?
I don't even want to talk about it. It's like dumb. Yeah. Yeah. I could have gotten here 15 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
But I'd do some of my own dumb, weird bullshit to get my mind in a place where I felt like I was okay to come in here and then do this podcast, even though, like, it's just you and me hanging out. It's not, but it's still, there's certain things I have to do to get it to a place that I feel comfortable that everything is good.
Well, everyone has their things, like self-care. You know, some people might meditate for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
If yours is different than that, then who's to say it's weird?
Yeah, but when it starts inhibiting your life, it's a problem. That's like saying someone like, well, I just needed 4 beers before I came on here. Like, that's my process. And it's like, dude, that's kind of a problem.
So you pounded 4 beers?
No, but I'm saying, like, if that's someone's process, like, dude, you're just doing a podcast. Like, I don't know if, like, I think you got an issue. Like, that's your process, but it's not a good process.
Right, well, pounding 4 beers is different because it inebriates you, and it's like an external thing that you're having to bring in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is it like you have to do a chant, or you have to knock a couple things off your notebook list?
Kind of, yeah, dumb shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just dumb little, like, I have to clear out every, well, here's one basic thing I've been doing recently. I've been clearing out, like, every app on my phone before we start, because I'm scared something will be recorded on the app somewhere, and so, like, or it'll get sent as a weird message to someone. So uh-huh. If you open my phone right now, there's nothing active. Everything is deactivated, and everything is off, and, like, which isn't that rare,
yeah.
But, I'm very paranoid about it being on, and are people listening, hearing, seeing, all shit like that.
You know we're recording this right now.
I know. Yeah, now we're good. Yeah.
So growing up in Georgia, did you sense this as a kid? Was this something that was happening?
Probably about high school. Started, high school prize when it kind of happened.
What was the first inclination that this was going on?
I used to drive my car around, like, a big thing of OCD. I don't want to do the whole podcast on OCD. I don't mind talking about it, and it's interesting. I've talked about it on a million podcasts, but your listeners might not,
right?
You know, so I don't mind. I used to do this thing where, and I still do a lot of it. It's super embarrassing, super shitty, but it's the thing with OCD is it's not really you. It's like your brain doing, like, it's what OCD people do is eerily and scarily identical and weird as hell. And you're like, what the, why? You're like, that's a bizarre action, but that, like, those other people with OCD do the exact same action. And it's like, how is that possible? It's so specific.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I used to do this thing where, let's say, like, I picked you up in a car, and then I get nervous that I hit someone somehow, and I'd look in my rearview mirror to see, and then I'd see, like, a shadow, or, like, we'd hit a speed bump, and then I would drive around the block to, like, check to make sure I didn't kill somebody. And sometimes I drive around like 3 or 4 times, mm-hmm. which could not be more or less productive.
It would be ironic if, like, driving back around a check,
you actually hit someone. Yeah. Yeah. But, like, then you literally, did someone fall? When I ran over that cup, was that actually a person? Did I kill someone? And this is a highly, like, it's like, this is like textbook OCD, like one of the main, and like driving back to make, like, I'll share this one. I'm fucking super embarrassed about it right now. Like, when I parked here, I literally got on my, like, in a push-up position on the behind my car, mm-hmm. to look underneath to make sure no one was, like, wedged under there.
Wow.
That's insane. That's fucking, my hand, I touched the road. I don't want to fucking touch the road. It's like gasoline. I mean, it's fine. I wiped them off and
you did wash your hands.
And then I first came in and washed my hands, which you would never know that unless I told you.
Right.
You would just know that I just wash my hands and use the restroom. But I wash my hands because I touched the road outside because I was on my, literally, like, in a push-up position. I don't want my knees to hit, right? To look under my car to make sure nobody was wedged under there. That's a huge waste of time. You look like a maniac on the street. It's super embarrassing. It's like, it makes me want to cry, not so much for myself, but because if you read other people, and I'm talking a lot, I apologize. If you read other people who have OCD, it's like textbook. There's like a guy who, like, there's many kind of OCD books you can read. A guy who, like, has this, he can't, like, drive down certain roads if gasoline or oil had spilled.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll, like, literally be up at 2 a.m, like, scrubbing the street to, like, get the gasoline off so he can drive down it for work the next morning. Meanwhile, he's got to be up at 6 a.m. because he has to get to work. So he's already in, like, no sleep. It's like, could not be a sadder. Like, for your quality of life, OCD is, like, one of the highest, like, I think it's third on that, like, DSM or whatever, that psychological book that, like, describes, you know, alcoholism, depression, like
right.
OCD, I think is ranked third for like disrupting your quality of life. Mm-hmm. Like it's horrific.
Is yours always involved hitting someone with the car?
That's just one. Right. That's just one of a million things I do. Yeah.
Wow. That is, sounds debilitating, sucks. But also
it sucks.
It's probably serves you, like you said, in other ways productively.
When you get it under control, you can fucking do anything, mm-hmm. but you got to get it under control. It's like anything else in life.
Yeah. Are there people that have gotten it under control?
Yeah. It's highly, the therapy for it's highly effective.
Hypnotism?
No. Cognitive therapy, like CBT, cognitive behavior. Yeah. And then there's a subsect of that called ERP, which would be exposure and response prevention, which is basically just making you do things you're afraid of, and then you're training your brain that it's okay.
Right. So like NLP, you're retraining your brain, your reactions to things?
Yeah.
Because you do some NLP stuff, right?
No.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Because your social media posts are very positive, and I was like, yeah. Oh, they're very... Like NLP, do you know what NLP is? Neuro-linguistic
you
programming.
You like say repeat things over and over and to get your brain in a way that...
You consciously try to change your reactions to things. So if something happens to you, instead of reacting like you always react,
yeah.
You kind of retrain your brain to be like, to rethink your natural reaction. And you say, oh, I'm not going to react that way. I'm going to react this way from now on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's similar to that. Mm-hmm. It's a little exposure and response prevention. It's like the most effective approach is like it's like physically doing something, like not looking under my car. Like even though I did, like not looking at it and feeling really uncomfortable.
Well,
about
even before that, the yeah. feeling comes up.
Yeah.
Telling you, Lance, look under your car to make sure.
Yeah.
Right. So when that feeling comes up, your response is, oh, I gotta get in a push up position. Yeah. Look under my car.
Yeah.
But next time that feeling comes up, you'd be like, oh, this time I'm gonna say I don't need to look under my car.
Sure.
It's all good.
Similar to that, yeah. But then it's taking the action of not doing it because you're exposing yourself to not looking. Because when I go back to if I don't look. What happens is your anxiety shoots up. Did I kill someone? Is someone stuck in it? Are they dying right now? Catastrophic thinking, right? And then if I don't do it, like, and then maybe I will be more uncomfortable, more on edge, more whatever. But then when I go back to my car and I pull away, no one's dead. So then you've just trained your brain. Every time you do something, it's a training in your brain.
Right.
You've trained it to go, oh, no one's dead when you park.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so the more times you do that, because your thinking is just synapses firing and creating neural pathways. Every time you do, that's why you get better at something. Whenever you practice whatever, shooting a basketball yeah. or whatever the fuck, like your brain creates like synapses that fire that then create the pathway.
It's the amazement of the human mind.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible. So it's highly encouraging too because it shows like whatever you really want to do, you could just, like you play guitar, see guitars around, and mm-hmm. I know you play guitar. Like when you start, you suck.
Yeah.
But now you can do shit because you've literally just trained your brain. That's all it is. It's synapses that then tell your fingers to do certain things that make the music come out.
And it stays there forever.
Yeah, you got it. Well, you can lose it if you stop I guess it will stay forever, but the brain's, plasticity or it's malleable. So you could actually train it to do other things. Like you could actually probably train your brain away from guitar if you wanted it, because you could kill those neural. Or what it would do is basically you instead of practicing guitar, you practice, I don't know, fucking
drums,
yo-yoing or something. I'm trying to go even farther, yeah. Right? Yo-yoing, because now and everything is connected, but you're basically just you've so hard strengthened the yo-yo synapses, that neural pathway, that you're a phenomenal yo-yoer, but you haven't really practiced on it. Like there's so much better than your guitar skills.
I'd be like the Jimi Hendrix of yo-yos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. Imagine Jimi Hendrix is still alive and that's what he did. He was like the master of the yo-yo.
The yo-yo. You ever see yo-yo championships on YouTube? Incredible.
Really?
Incredible. It's like two yo-yos. Guys going nuts.
Mm.
Highly recommend it.
See, I could make a Yo-Yo Ma reference,
but
I won't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not, I thought of that too. Yeah, I know. That's not a bad one.
Okay, so you've gotten this more under control. You noticed it in high school.
I'm not doing good at the moment.
You're not doing
good? Honestly, no.
At this exact moment.
Last 6 months. You go in phases, but the last 6 months for me has been about as bad as it's been in the last 10 years.
Oh, I was wondering, is there something like... So all the therapy so far is just talking therapy, right?
It's no, not, exposure. Exposure to things. So,
but it's not medications or anything like that.
I did that in the past when I was in college. A little bit of Lexapro, a little bit of Zoloft. Don't love it. That's my own personal. It helps a ton of people, and they're very beneficial. It's exposure to things, like If you're scared to like touch a subway pole, like a hand washing is a big OCD thing.
Everybody should be scared of touching.
But here's
what
they'll make you do, because OCD people wash their hands till they bleed.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty common OCD thing. You wash your hands over and over and over. They're very red. My hands are very red now. In the winter, they're horrific. They look terrible. I wear more long sleeves. Obviously, in the winter, you can wear long sleeves because that's. But like in general, like my hands look terrible.
Mm-hmm. I just heard the southern accent.
It'll come out a little bit. Yeah,
in general.
Yeah, it'll come out. So. what they'll make you do is, and because every time you touch a subway pole, then I'm like, if I touch my nose or my mouth, I'm getting drugs in me from a people, I'm touching with germs, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So exposure, this is what they'd have you do. They basically have you go on the subway pole and touch, just grip it all over top to bottom, touch the floor, touch the ceiling, touch your face, touch mm-hmm. your eyes, touch your nose, lick the pole.
Ew.
And then go eat a sandwich. Like a bread. So like all that shit on your hands
right.
gets in the bread and then you eat it and then you drink water so that it, and then you, what your anxiety is like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Am I getting sick? Blah, 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 blah. Your anxiety shoots up to 100 or 10, whatever the scale you're on.
Right.
All the way. And then after like 10 minutes, you start to realize like, oh, I'm okay. I'm not dying. I'm okay. I'm like, because nothing happens from you from touching the subway pole. You know how much shit you touch every day?
Every
then
day.
You touch your face.
Breathing New York City
walking
air.
Around. It's terrible. I've been getting air alerts on my phone from AccuWeather. I don't know if you, like, because of the humidity and the heat.
I have no alerts on my phone except for text.
Yeah, much
Facebook.
Better. Much yeah. better. But the point is, it's exposing yourself to two things.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm talking too much, slow me. I feel like I'm
no, you're not.
Just ranting at times.
You're giving me a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
And it is similar to NLP. Like, here's an example where I use NLP is like, I get social anxiety too. You know, I'm fine socially, but I don't like to be social naturally.
Okay.
And this expands to not just being social, but I've kind of been training my brain to, when I feel uncomfortable,
uh-huh.
to say, oh, I'm out of my comfort zone. That's good because that's the place of growth.
Sure.
So I'm keep telling myself that, all right, so look, oh, I feel uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
Don't react to that by running away from it.
Sure.
React to that by welcoming it because that's growth.
The Even feeling, though it's uncomfortable.
Yes, because that uncomfortable feeling is the feeling of growth.
Yeah.
Growth happens that way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes like, oh, everything's new. Everything is different. What's going on? It can give you anxiety, but that is what growth
yeah.
can feel like.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's your exposure to the situation.
Right.
It's the exact same thing.
Exact same thing.
Yeah. Where if you keep avoiding it, you'll never get better at the social thing. You'll never. And every time you avoid it, you're creating that neural pathway. Oh, I'm safer if I don't go. Oh, I feel like less. I feel less anxious if
right.
I don't go, if I'm not in the social setting. But all you're doing is fucking your brain. Every time you give into that,
yeah.
you're fucking yourself. Now, in the moment, you feel better because like, whew, I didn't have to go into that party. Whew, I didn't have to talk to that person.
Right.
But you're literally fucking yourself harder because you're just creating that neural pathway. Where every time you go into the party and you feel uncomfortable, you feel on edge, your skin wants to crawl, you get a little whatever, you're creating that neural pathway. Because eventually you go, I went to the party, it was fine, nothing happened, it was cool.
And maybe you met someone that changed your
yeah,
life.
Yeah, and it was even better.
Yeah.
So when eventually you do that enough times, you create that neural pathway
mm-hmm.
to then, parties are fine. I got no problem going to parties. I'll talk to the fuck I want and
right.
have a great time.
And with your Subway example, I would even take it a step before drinking the water.
Okay.
Like, when you feel the anxiety from touching the pole
yeah.
and all that, that anxiety you're going to react to by feeling stressed out.
Uh-huh.
So you feel the anxiety and stop it right there. And say, oh, you know what? This time I'm not going to get stressed out. I'm going to say, this is the place of growth.
Uh-huh.
This is how I'm going to beat this. This anxiety doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I don't have to react to it the same way
yeah.
I reacted to it since high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to a degree. The problem with OCD brains are it's obsessed. All our brains are obsessed. We're all fucking high strung with the internet and the world today. Like, but the OCD brain can't stop. That's the problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good point you're making is you have to distinguish, like, this is, like they always tell you this too. It's like, it's not you, it's your OCD. So you have to distinguish, like you're just kind of saying
right.
there, like, I'm not crazy. I'm not, I'm Gary, and I just happen to be, this nervous thing is something separate that's
right.
affecting me. And then you, because if you can distance it like that, yeah. So I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it's like it's kind of this concept of like there's two of you inside of you. If you're noticing your feelings,
yeah.
then there's two of you inside of you.
Sure.
So if you're noticing your feelings, who is that other person?
Yeah. Now you get into like ego, id, ID, or you know whatever, ed, whatever the fuck all that. Steve.
Steve, who is
whatever
this
the fuck
Steve?
All that so psychological stuff is.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that. Being OCD, noticing your OCD in high school, you chose to go into a very public profession and sure. one that is the scariest profession to most people on earth, stand-up comedy.
Public speaking is it, yeah.
Public speaking is the scariest thing. And yet you do it several times a night, every night.
Yeah, yeah. But of course, as you know, I mean, you know enough comedians, like, we're all, you know, OCD runs high in the comedian, I guess, on the landscape or whatever. A lot of comedians have OCD, mm-hmm. are diagnosed with it, have been to therapy for it, take medication for it, do all the, like, it's, you know, and plus just humans. And I think, you know, everybody's got their own thing. Every human's got their own fucked up shit. And it's just comics are open to talk about it.
But there's so much out of your control when you're on stage and you're all alone.
Yes and no.
Facing the audience.
Yes and no.
Do you feel like stuff is totally in your control?
More and more. The more I do it, it's more in my control. The vibe you carry with you, what place I'm playing to put, it's all energy. So you're connecting yourself with that energy. Like, I'm not, certain shows, I'm like, God, it's super far. There's no money. It's like a shitty bar. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really like, the people are like, kind of like not great. I like almost everybody, but there's somebody like, I'm like, that person feels negative. I'm like, I'm not gonna put myself in that environment. I don't need to.
Right.
If I do myself at like a good comedy club and like, it's like, you know what I'm saying? So like, then you are in control because you're choosing, like, I came over here because I know you. Yeah. I just, it's like, I'm not gonna go to a random house where we are right now. I don't know if you want people to know if it's where you do the podcast. But like,
you don't have to give my exact address.
No. But I'm saying, I'm not going to just go. I put myself in this position because I know you. I know what you're about as much as I can.
Right.
You know, so you do have control by where you put yourself on stage.
But you can go to the same comedy club and have a great audience, then go back the next night or even the next show. The late show is a bunch of drunk jerks.
Yeah. You can't always dictate that kind of stuff, but hopefully if you're at a place, a good establishment, like the staff will tell them to quiet. It's your chances are bad. Like, right. The ceiling could fall in on us. I don't fucking know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I coming with the chance that I think this, it looks like a sturdy building. It's a nice place. I'm pretty sure it's going to be good. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to make your best calls. And listen, things happen. Maybe the fire alarm starts going off in this building because someone's, and we all have to evacuate and stay on the street for 30 minutes. I can't say it's not going to happen, but things do happen in life. So a heckler does yell shit at you, but if an alarm goes off in this apartment right now, I'm prepared for it. I'll walk down the flight of stairs and fucking go outside.
Right.
So the same thing with the heckler. I'm prepared to know, you know, what to do.
How many years have you been doing stand-up?
13.
13.
Looks so like two. Yeah. Yeah.
So you have enough experience where you know how to deal with the heckler.
Yeah, you got your tricks, like anything else in life, you know?
Yeah.
It's like when you learn to drive, you can't fucking go around your block, but then you get older, you can drive on highways and interstates and cities. And
sidewalks.
Sidewalks if you want.
The law.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like anything else in life, I think.
Okay, so we're going to keep this train here.
Whatever you want to do, yeah.
Yeah, this is good. I mean, I could talk to you about one subject forever, but I want to get your history.
Whatever you want to do.
Your lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up in Georgia, high school, OCD hits. Did you know you wanted to do stand-up?
Didn't even know it was a thing. There's no real arts in my hometown. It's the South, so like if you do theater, like you're called gay. And this is 20 years ago, so no, you know, it's like... Theater was just uncool. In my hometown, there's not an art scene. I mean, there's now a little, but not.
Were musicians cool?
There was very few. I knew like a couple kids in bands that like played out of their garage and stuff. But like, that's cool. But there's not a lot of arts. Just in general, arts aren't stressed in my hometown.
Yeah. So you had no exposure to stand up.
Pretty much zero to any arts. No real painting classes, no real art, nothing. Mm-hmm. Just like, you go to school, you get decent grades. I play a lot of sports. Sports are, but you know, it's the South. Football, soccer, baseball, basketball. That shit's huge.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Did you go to college?
Yeah.
What did you go to college for?
I did 1 year. What I go for?
Yeah.
I majored in political science.
So were you interested in that in high school?
Yeah, kind of. I like people. And but the government shit pisses me off. Like, that's a whole different story.
But you studied political science.
That's
what
I have a degree in, is
you
political science. Yeah, and then I have a theater minor, where I went and didn't have a major at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would have majored in theater once I found it, but they didn't have it, and then I was already like a year out to graduate.
So your introduction to theater and arts were in college?
College, 100%, yeah.
Do you remember the first exposure you had to it?
Yeah, I took drawing 101.
Drawing?
Yeah, because I never did anything like that, and so there was like my sophomore year, I took drawing 101. I think I took an improv, like, you know, intro to improvisation or something. I took like three or four art classes because I never, basically I went out for the football team. I made it as, I was like, I walked on as kicker. I never even played football.
Yeah.
I played soccer. And so then I was like.
You grew up with your mom and dad?
Just my mom.
Just your mom?
Yeah.
No dad?
My dad, was away from our family, I'll just say, like, from the time I don't even remember. Maybe I was 6, 8, something like that, 10. I don't have very many memories of it.
Your parents got divorced?
Yeah.
And were you in touch with him?
Up for a little while, but not... I used to do every other weekend with my dad, and then it just kind of, like, slowly faded away.
You stopped being in contact with each other?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it too much. I've talked about it in the past a lot. I don't terribly want to delve into too much of it at the moment. But he just wasn't around. Like, throughout kind of my high school, not really there.
Right.
And then from then on, yeah.
So your mom never exposed you to drawing or the theater?
We just didn't have. My town's not... That's not what my town is about. It's just not really... I mean, there are obviously, like, art studios and stuff there, but it's just... It's not like New York or, like, a major hub where there's, like, oh, there's, like... It's just not stressed.
Right.
This is the South. Like,
I've said this on this podcast several times by now, I'm sure, but like how one person can change your whole life. You know, if there was one person in your high school that was like, hey, Lance, check out this comedy tape. It would have just changed your whole life. One person.
Yeah.
With one sentence.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me.
I had my college professor, Karen Berman is her name. She was like my first kind of art teacher, like for improv and a couple different acting, like intro kind of things. Changed my life. She's like one of my best teachers I ever had, hands down, because she, no matter what I did, she allowed it. You could do the weirdest fucking thing and she would be like, that's awesome.
Right.
And like the experiment to be able to do it, because people are like, oh, you can't draw that or you can't do that or you can't say that. She was there like, as long as you were creating stuff, she would be supportive, and it could not be, that's literally why I'm a comedian today. Like,
that's the best lesson because there's the biggest hindrance to creativity is the critical mind.
Yeah.
They can't work side by side.
No, it sucks. She allowed anything. If you wanted to like literally stand on your head and then like throw paint at the ceiling, she would say it was the coolest, most innovative, interesting, and that just allowed you to experience and try things.
Yeah, so you have the freedom to just output more and more creative stuff.
Yeah.
And then that's how you can get into some really groundbreaking stuff.
From there, I started taking public speaking classes. I took public speaking twice. Nobody does that. Like, it's stupid. That's because my grandfather told me, he goes, if you can public speak, you can like do anything in life. And literally, so I took that twice. I took multiple acting classes. Then I became a theater minor because I just started getting, like, once I found that, I was like, this is what I'm doing now.
So you abandoned the political science?
Did you
want to be a politician?
I didn't really know. You know, I just liked people, and I thought I'd be a senator, and like I'd go to lunch. That's literally my thought. I'd just go to lunch with people and like shake hands. Like, that'd be cool.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I don't give a fuck. Like, politics, and even now we're in a whole different, you know, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah. Do you follow politics?
Just some headlines, but in general, I don't really know what's going on because I don't think the public is giving enough information.
So you try and stay away from it.
And I'm very disillusioned by it. I think a lot of it's, you know, I don't vote, which my girlfriend is like beyond pissed at.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't voted in however many, I don't vote. I don't follow. I personally don't think any of it's real.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in a lot of government things. I've worked in a big bank at one point. I've been enough on the inside to kind of see how things operate. And I think it's all shit. And I think the general public is just pumped messages by, let's say, like Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. It doesn't matter who it is. They're all owned by big business people who are then tied to the government. So it's just you're getting spit messages to you that aren't even real. And we're like, I'm going to vote on this issue because of this. Like, dude, the real thing is not... There's some shit happening behind doors. That's just what you're being fed.
But people's lives are being affected in a real way. I mean, if you're a gay person and you want to get married, that change of law affected you greatly.
Sure, but I honestly don't even think votes are counted.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just spit a number to us. Like, yeah, well, and I just don't think they're counted. I know that sounds kind of insane.
Yeah.
I've just seen too much corruption from being someone on the inside of shit that I'm like, none of this is real. It's all one big fucking game.
Did this happen while you were studying political science in college?
A little bit.
To get disgusted with
A little bit. I had some internships, and then just being around people, I just realized it's just one big bullshit contest.
Did you go to school in D.C.?
I did, yeah.
So you're in college in Washington, D.C., studying the beast.
Political
inside
science.
Inside the belly of the beast.
And I had internships in D.C.,
Yeah.
So
I could see how that could turn you off, too.
Yeah, I was just too enveloped by it. Before any of the Trump stuff, I mean, this is years ago, I saw so much on the inside. I was like, this is all just some big, stupid game. Interesting, people could say, like, well, you're not involved in the issues. It's like, my goal, like, we all serve in different capacities in this life, I think. So it's like, I'm not interested. I don't, I try and be as nice to everybody as I can. Everywhere I go, I try and make people laugh. I try and, like, that's how I best serve people, like, as opposed to getting wrapped up in issues personally.
Right.
And some here's what people might say, well, you have the luxury of doing that because maybe you're not affected by this issue or that issue. And, like, I don't think everyone has to be, like, up in arms about every issue. Like, if you're a great chef and you're like, I want to make great food for people of all races, of all genders, of all socioeconomic, of all ages, I just want to make fucking great food for people.
Yeah.
To me, you're doing your part. You don't need to be like you don't have to vote on everything and be polling forever or campaigning or canvassing. You know, like, if you're a great chef, like, invest in the food, make phenomenal food that serves people and nourishes them and makes maybe a great dining experience they feel good about. Find a way to make food cheaper for the masses, shit like that. Like, I'm more focused on my day today as opposed to, like, even if I read the news, like, I'll be in a good mood and I'll be like, dude, I can't, like, like, I see people getting shot. I'm like, dude, this just gets me depressed. I'm like, this sucks. And and the government is so big, I don't know what to do about it. I'm one person. I don't know what to fucking do about it. I think guns are horrific. I think every gun should be abolished in the whole country. Like, go ahead. Sorry, I'm just ranting.
You're doing your part by making people laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think you should vote, but I'm not going to get into that with you.
Yeah,
but
my girlfriend kills me for it. She hates it. She's like the biggest voting advocate.
Yeah, you could at least vote. You don't have to follow the news if any of that. Just be.
I don't even know what I'm voting for.
Be an informed vote, or just vote how I do.
I don't think we're informed. That's the thing. I don't think we're, as a general public, we think we're informed.
Right.
It's almost like this. There's for the comedy scene, for I guess a reference, it's like you want to get into the Comedy Cellar. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
You're a comedian, you move here from Ohio, you heard the Comedy Cellar is a place, you know what it is, you want to get in.
Yeah.
So you just send like a DVD to the Comedy Cellar because that's how it works. It's not how it works.
Right.
There's a backdoor thing that happens. Yeah. Somebody who's there has got to go, hey, Gary's really funny. A couple people got to say, we need Gary auditioning.
Right.
And the general public doesn't know that. They don't know that's how that works.
Right.
So I think politics is the same way. We're fed a message about whatever, and then shit's happening somewhere else that we don't even hear about. And so whatever I'm voting on isn't even relevant. It's not even part of the issue or the thing at hand.
Yeah, I think being in D.C. and studying it probably was ultimately a good thing for you because it cut off the illusion of what politics in D.C. could be.
Yeah.
Like when I moved to Los Angeles, I was young, you know, I was in my early 20s, and I was like, oh, wow, Hollywood, this...
Exactly.
These are the people making decisions for Hollywood movies and culture. It's just some douchebag that rides in a nice car from his simple house
to
the studio.
Shit. Yeah.
He doesn't know anything. He doesn't interact with anybody.
The real artist,
All he's doing is he's in his car all day from his house to his office. Mm-hmm. It's Los Angeles. There's not the interaction of New York City. And it kind of pulled the curtains open.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience for me because it just shattered all the illusions that I had at the time.
I think a lot of things are, I agree with you on that. I've blogged for many sites over the years to, like, you know, make money as a, you know, all these kind of side jobs.
You're paid blogger?
Yeah. I was blogging for one site. I'm 35. I've been skateboarding since I was 4 years old. I know a couple professional skateboarders. I surf. I know a couple professional surfers. I know this inside and out. I wrote a blog on skateboarding and, like, somebody like a 21-year-old editor, like who did never skateboard jacked my article up and made me look like a jackass. Not that it matters, but like that's what I'm saying. The media, a lot of things are like, because that's just that person creating content that needs to be pumped out. And she edited all these incorrect things about skateboarding. She's never skateboarded. I just tell by the way she edited it.
Right.
Like I skateboard. I've been skateboarding for 31 years.
Yeah.
Like I know what I'm talking about. Don't fuck my article. So my point is, I don't know what the point is. I went a little tangent to you, but
you realize how imperfect the world is.
Yeah. And I'll give you one last example onto your Hollywood thing. So when I was in college, one of my few jobs I had, I interned at the Department of Justice in the Civil Rights Division and then the Disability Rights Section.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty like helpful, badass. The people I work for are fucking great.
Right.
And then I don't even know how much I should talk about this, to be honest, but...
It's been past 7 years. I think it's okay.
Is that how it works? And the people I work for are phenomenal. Basically, here's what I got disillusioned, but one of the reasons I got disillusioned... So our thing, we're reading cases for the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is like wheelchair ramps and elevators for people with like crutches, wheelchair. It makes sure everything's like compliant in buildings so that like everyone
to make life easier for people with disabilities.
And I was based in this basement at the Department of Justice, and there's just hundreds of filing cabinets, thousands of letters. And my job was to kind of go through some of these complaints, be like, hey, I went to eat at Chili's in Pennsylvania, and the Chili's didn't have a wheelchair ramp. Whoa. So I'm writing and a big government formal, you know, complaint letter. And I would open up these cases. Some of them were like 10 years old. No one ever read them. And there were millions of these.
Right.
Millions. And I was like, dude, and all these people had written these big, I went to Chili's and then like I couldn't get up, and then I was stuck in the hall for 35 minutes because no one could help me. And I'm like, dude, this is the saddest thing. And no one, the government, they were just like, so it's like, even like writing a letter to your government, a lot in my mind, just fucking sits in a bank. No one, some intern catalogs that we got 25 today, they put in a thing, and then 10 years later someone like me opens up. And then I would call these people with disabilities.
Yeah.
And I think about a lot of people with disabilities, they have other health issues.
Right.
Right. A lot of these people would be passed away. So I would call to try and reopen a thing, like, hey, I'm trying to see this case from 1992 or whatever,
and they died in the Chili's,
and they would go, yeah, this person died. So I'm like, dude, we can't even help, like, what a shame.
Yeah.
And that's just one of my experiences I had that upset me.
Well, there's just so many people. Maybe if they got like, you know, hundreds about one particular Chili's, if people maybe are dying in a hallway in a Chili's,
yeah,
in Louisiana,
yeah,
maybe the government would do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And social media now, social media wasn't what it was then when I was doing it. So now there's a whole different game being played. But I'm very disillusioned by the whole government, the whole process. I worked at JP Morgan for a couple months at one point. That's a huge bank that's tied to all that shit. I worked at Hardball with Chris Matthews, you know, a political TV show.
Yeah. What'd you do there?
That was just interning. That was just a summer intern. But, you know,
that's
you
still on TV,
you
right?
See yeah, it's been around forever.
Yeah.
You just see things and I don't know. I've seen enough to be unhappy. I'm so disgusted by the government and the way so many things are run that I just get upset, and I don't know how to get rid of guns. I think guns are the dumbest thing on the planet. You look at stats of other, real quick, you look at stats of other countries, like gun deaths versus, it's just stupid. It couldn't be dumber. And I don't know how to, and every time one person gets shot, I'm like, dude, what are we doing?
Right.
Like when kids get shot, like we're not even protecting kids. What the fuck are we doing?
Right.
And be like, oh, we still need our guns. I'm like, dude, you're a fucking idiot. Like, what are you talking about? Get rid of all guns now.
That statistic where more kids died in high schools than in the U.S. military.
Horrific.
In 2017.
Horrific. I don't know how to fix this issue. And I get so enraged that, you know what? I could go protest for guns or go on a march. And those are all great things. Although I don't even believe half of the government, like, you know, voting and shit's real.
Right.
But like, I can better serve by hopefully making people laugh. I came on this podcast and talked about OCD. Maybe that helps somebody else out later. Maybe
exactly.
To me, this is how I can serve, because it's something I can do, as opposed to like blogging about guns forever and those are all great things too. But I'm saying, like, I feel like I can at least make some kind of concrete change to the people who listen to this, to the people I interact with on a daily basis at the deli, at the restaurant, the parking, blah, blah, blah.
And doing stand-up. I mean, you're performing for audiences. If you write a joke that people are able to swallow, that's anti-gun but still entertaining, and then they repeat it to someone, and that person repeats it to two people, those two people repeat it to four people, and then it spreads outwards. You could change some lives.
And I actually, I'm very ranty today, so please slow me down if I'm yelling too much shit, because you're
making my job easy.
So, for comedy, I specifically don't want my comedy to be political or socio anything, because the way I view it is, there's so much shit in the world. When you look in a room of comedy, you might be performing for five people, you might be for 500, you might be for 5,000, it doesn't matter. When you look at a room across section, every person has problems. Somebody just got diagnosed with cancer, somebody's going through a divorce, someone's kids don't talk to them, someone is getting evicted from their apartment, someone hates their job, it goes on and on and on and on, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody has mental health issues, like all the things, there's a million issues we all have. And for me, when we come into that room, that comedy room, this is why I do comedy, amongst other things, but this is the core of why I do it, at the base of it. When we come into that room for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is, and then we can make people laugh, it's a time to forget all the bullshit that we all have. And comedy brings everybody, when it's done correctly, in my opinion, brings everybody together. It brings all races together, all genders together, all whatever, all that bullshit is, because like, dude, we're just laughing, we're just fucking enjoying ourselves. So I don't want my comedy to really be like political, or I want it to be like Ace Ventura or like Dumb and Dumber. It's like, dude, fuck the world for an hour and a half, let's just fucking enjoy ourselves and forget we're all, because it brings everybody together.
Right.
When an old white lady like laughs next to a black dude, laughs next to a gay dude, laughs next to us, like whatever, you get what I'm saying, the cross section of people.
Yeah.
It's like, my God, we're all just fucking human out here doing
our best.
And you know
what? They're, after laughing together, they're way less apt to pull a gun out on each other.
There you go. And then the guy who was going to like maybe shoot up a school tomorrow is like, dude, I feel pretty good. Maybe he doesn't shoot up the school tomorrow. Maybe this guy
waits a week.
Yeah. Oh, God, our countries would say. Maybe that guy who's going to beat his kid doesn't go home and beat his kid because he feels a little better about. Maybe the people who are stressed out at work go in a little calmer the next day and have a better day at work and treat people. So to me, that's a skill set I've been given. I believe by like a God, a universe, whatever you want to call that. Mm-hmm. And however I can best bring, that's the talent I serve.
Right.
So everybody finds, I read a lot of Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and stuff like these. I'm kind of echoing some of these guys.
These
guys' policies or whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway.
Self-help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So in college, you've taken improv.
Sure.
So that's kind of the closest you're getting to stand-up comedy at this point. And how much did you do improv?
I was in improv troupe for a year.
So you learned to yes and...
All that shit, yeah. Short form, long form improv. And then out of that, we did a game where... A short form game where the audience would give us a topic. Mm-hmm. And you have to go out and stand alone, like from the back wall, and then make a pun off the topic. And the goal is, you know, the crowd's be like, oh, because it's the puns.
Right.
And I love that. I love that immediate reaction, coming with a pun on the spot and then having people react like, oh, it's terrible because of the pun.
And going up alone, that's the beginning of you as a stand-up.
That's it. That's how I started. And the minute I was like, holy shit, you can go out there and you can say shit and people immediately respond back.
Yeah.
I was done. That was it. And I just started going to open mics. I quit improv the next year to strictly focus on stand-up. Once I found out, like, this is what I'm doing.
What do you find the differences between stand-up and improv? Good and the bad.
Done well. They're both phenomenal art forms. Improv done well is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's hard to find it done well.
Stand-up done well is also amazing. Improv done bad is pretty bad. But so is stand-up, you know. Improvisers obviously tend to I think they're probably in general a little more positive people and what do I know? Like,
I've noticed that too.
And love to interact with one another together, as you know, where stand-ups are a little more cynical, a little more depressed, have kind of a skewed, you know, cynical view of the world maybe, and then love to do it solo, of course. So, and I'm generalizing grossly.
Sure. Yeah,
of course,
there's always exceptions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you like working alone as opposed to working with a group? Is that what drew you to stand up?
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's OCD based. I control everything when I'm up there because I do improv. And somebody come out with an idea or something, I'm like, dude, that fucking sucks. I'm the funny one here. What you're doing sucks. Like in my mind, that's how I would be, which isn't really accurate. But it's an OCD. When you stand up, I'm in complete control.
Yeah.
I write it, I edit it, how I say it, when I say it, what I want to say. I'm in complete control of the situation.
Right. Yeah. I started on improv too, and it's like.
Yeah.
Someone's like, oh, Gary's the turtle. I'm like, no,
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
not a turtle.
Fuck you. Yeah.
Nope, not a turtle.
Yeah.
I will not be crawling around the stage acting like a turtle.
Yeah.
So
it's a different person that does improv than stand up.
It is. It's a different person.
Sometimes there's crossover, but you rarely find someone who does a lot of stand up and a lot of improv. I mean, there are, but you either kind of do improv or you do stand up, you know?
But you could bring those improv lessons into your stand up.
100%. Yeah. They feed each other. It's like playing basketball or soccer, completely different sports. But like the way I play basketball and soccer, the way they both operate is very similar. The way you have to get wide to get a pass, the way. It's about keeping possession of the ball too, because a lot of times basketball, it's not four. They fucking pass it back. The game is the same basically,
right?
But it's completely different. One's hands, one's feet, one. Yeah.
What elements of improv would you say you bring into your stand up?
Just spontaneity, of course. Like that, you know, when things happen, the moment you got to deal. You know, thinking on your feet.
Do you feel like your improv background made you more fearless?
No, personally, for me, no. I see how it could for people, but not for me.
How do you handle the ego rejection if a crowd doesn't like you?
Don't care anymore.
You don't care anymore?
Not at this point, because I'm good at what I do.
Right.
And I'm confident when I do, I'm good at what I do. So, and sometimes I am bad. Sometimes I'm off, as you just are in life. But I know when it's me and I know when it's the crowd. 99% of the time, I can tell the difference immediately. Sometimes it is me. I fucking stink, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes you just have off days as a person.
Yeah, but sometimes the crowd fucking does suck too, like 100%.
Yeah.
So if I know I'm good and I'm bringing my thing and I doesn't affect me at all because I know what I'm doing is good and I know I've done it enough times now. Because if you want to go back to like synapses, I've done it literally thousands of times where I've fired, like, I'm good at this. This joke works. So when you get, and I'm delivering it properly in the right setting and the crowd doesn't like it, I'm like, it doesn't do anything to me.
Right.
Whereas if you're 6 months in and you bomb, you know, they're like, oh my, it bombs. I literally at some points couldn't get out of bed for 3 days.
Because he bombed.
Curled in a ball for 3 days. No, I'm never going to make it in this career. No one likes me. Did everyone see that? What are people saying? And no one's doing any of that shit, but that's what your mind does.
Right. We tend to think people are thinking about us a lot more than
no
they
one
are.
Is. Yeah. No one is at all. No one gives a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you started doing stand-up in college.
Yeah.
And you went to your first open mic. How'd you do?
It was the funniest person on campus, you know, so that's how, like, at school.
What do you mean? Were voted funniest person?
No, it was a competition, the funniest man on campus.
Oh, okay.
They called it, was it funniest person, or it might have been man, because times were, you know, it might have been funniest person, whatever, well, you know, funniest person on campus.
Right.
Anyone could sign up, do 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever, you know.
Did you have material?
Yeah.
You did?
I did great.
You wrote jokes?
Yeah, I did great.
Was it similar to what you are now, one-liners?
Kind of, yeah. I wrote college jokes. If you're in college, oh, what about Chicken Finger Thursdays? That shit sucks, doesn't it? You fucking crush. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, and then I went to a second open mic in Maryland, because D.C., Maryland's the same, you know. And I was like, I went into the room. I still know the guy, and I'm still friends with him. I go in, and I was like, hey, I'm here for the open mic. And he was like, and I go, yeah, I've done this before. I was cocky as shit.
After one open mic?
Yeah. At my college, where the crowd is like
on your side, basically.
So I go, yeah, I do this mic, and I bombed so hard, and it was like being punched in the chest. I feel like I was punched in the chest.
Yeah.
And then I bombed for the next 50 times straight.
Now, this is common for stand-ups.
Yeah.
They do well the first time,
yeah,
and then it's heartbreak after that.
Because you have no expectation.
The first time.
Yeah, it was your expectation. I went into this Maryland thing. It's all kinds of, it wasn't my college friends, or it was like all kinds of people. Right. You're not allowed rowdy bar where maybe the spotlight's weird. Maybe the TV's on.
Right.
Maybe, and then people don't give a fuck, they're drinking. So like, and I literally bombed for the next 50 times in a row. But what kept me going was every time I always got a laugh. I always got one laugh or
amidst
two laughs.
The bomb.
Yeah. I could bomb for 5 minutes. I always said one line that was kind of funny. And, you know, you audio record that and go, that worked.
Right.
And then you just slowly build from there. And then over, oh, there's two lines that are funny. I got two lines that are funny now. And then, like, because I would never just go eat it. You see these people who just eat it, and you're like, dude, well, you stink. Like,
yeah.
Not in, it's like, dude, you're not getting any laughs. Like, you don't belong here.
But sometimes people don't notice. Like,
that's someone who's unaware. Like,
you must have seen someone bomb and then get off thinking they did well.
Still see it. What are you talking about? I see it every week.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, they're like, man, that was, I'm like, dude, you ate it. Like, I'm not going to tell them, but I'm like, dude, that was terrible. No one laughed. People hated it.
What do you think happens when they listen back to their recording? Do they hear laughter where there's dead silence?
That's hilarious. I don't know. I don't know.
Did you?
I don't know what to hear.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're fucking gone. I'm out of my mind. I'll admit that to anyone who meets me. I'm losing my mind.
You are losing your
I'm
mind.
I'm losing it. Like,
why?
My OCD's off the charts.
Uh-huh.
Like, off the charts. I'm not happy about a lot of stuff I've said on this podcast. I'm just like, but I've also been very aware, very clear. I'm here.
You've been great on this podcast.
Yeah, but to me, it's not right. It just is not right.
But are you that critical with yourself always?
Every moment of my day.
Does the OCD follow you on stage?
Everywhere.
How does it manifest itself on stage? You've got your jokes.
When I'm on, I'm as good as anybody that does this art form. Mm-hmm. I'll confidently say that.
Uh-huh.
Problem is, I'm not always on, as none of us are.
Right.
But I'm so particular about my timing, about my joke writing, about what I do. I'll put it up against anybody. As we all are, all comics are that way. But it's my style of the way I write now. I write very choppy one-liners because I got to get a laugh every so often to do, that's the way I built my style based off that.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfection. It's OCD is just perfectionist thinking. That's all it is.
Do you feel the OCD hit you while you're on stage?
I rarely have a moment in my life where I'm not super worried about everything, every possible thing. The only time it doesn't happen is when I play sports. Sometimes in stand-up, if I'm doing a long set and I get rolling, in this podcast, I feel pretty good. Like, I felt, you can tell I'm much more maybe clairvoyant than when we started. I was a little distracted.
Yeah.
Because now we're into it. I'm a little more in a flow. Literally something like playing basketball, I can get into that and lose my mind in something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause it's fast, rapid pace.
Cause there's no time to think about, you got passing and shooting and running and defending, and there's no time to think about the bullshit of the stove being on fire or whatever the dumb shit is.
Right. Well, that's the thing about doing stand up on stage. If you're delivering jokes and addressing the audience, and then your critical brain is saying, oh, that wasn't that great.
Yeah.
You did that a little too fast.
Yeah.
If that's going on simultaneously while you're onto your next joke, the audience could pick up on
100%. 100%.
So you got to get that out of your mind somehow. Yeah. Yeah. Or just let it roll off your shoulders.
You got to know how to harness it. I mean, I think when I'm on, I'm good. You know what I mean? Yeah. And a lot of that's because of us. I'm so particular about it. I mean, it's one of the reasons our show that I used to run was so good, yeah. You know, amongst other things, because it was fucking, it was on point.
Yeah.
Shit was not, when you went in there, the air conditioner, was it on 68 degrees or 64? I had the exact temperature set. The chair, I sat in every chair in our venue to see how far apart people's knees would be between the next row. Every chair I sat in. The lighting, very specific. Literally off, you know, very minute on everything.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen you dozens and dozens of times.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And they're not all good by any means. But like when I'm on, I'm fucking, my shit is on point. The timing is on point.
Totally. Things,
and that's literally all OCD.
Yeah, your experience plays very well. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, thank you. And that's OCD doing that.
Interesting, because it doesn't come across that way at all.
That's the thing. It's an illusion. It's an art, you know, it's a craft, mm-hmm. you know.
So you started in D.C.
Yeah.
And is that when you moved to New York?
So I started my junior improv sophomore year, stand-up junior year, and then I came to New York for an internship between junior and senior year of college. And then,
was that the Chris Matthews internship?
No, I interned at MTV for a summer.
Okay. So you're like, you got politics. I'm going full other way.
Yeah, I started Department of Justice, then Hardball Chris Matthews, media and politics, and went full entertainment.
Right, and you're like on MTV Cribs.
Yeah. And then I started open mics when I was here in New York. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in D.C., here's a cool little story. I was walking on the street. I was about to graduate. Everyone I was in school with is to become a lawyer. They're all politics. Lawyer, work at a big firm, a lobbyist thing, you know, these kind of jobs. And I was like, man, maybe I'll go to law school. I don't know what to fucking do.
Right.
And I was graduating in a couple weeks, and I had no, at this point, I'd missed the law. I don't know, you know, I had no job. I had nothing. I was about to graduate college.
Everyone else already has their future.
Oh, yeah. They have job offers and where they're going to live in San Francisco, whatever the fuck they're going to do.
Yeah.
I have no job offers. I'm walking around, like, I'm going to do comedy. It was just absurd, right? Like, you could argue. So I'm walking around DC. I'm like, should I move to LA and like just go do that? Should I like, and a couple comics had told me I should move to New York. The people I knew, they're like, go to New York and get, you know. And then I was like, maybe I'll stay in DC and do this thing here because I know it and figure this out for a couple years. Mm-hmm. I was walking down the street. I'm walking around Georgetown and I run into, I'm just walking down an alley basically. And then I'm by myself and I walk by and Dave Chappelle is just standing there. Like, and this is 2006. He had either just gone to Africa, whatever it is, he's the biggest, and he still is.
Right.
He's the biggest comedy star on the planet.
Yeah.
This is when Chappelle show was like, the, you know, whatever, around that time. And I'm walking on the street, and he's just smoking a cigarette with a friend. Now, literally, if he would have been two blocks over, he would have been mobbed. But it just happened to be this, and I'm about to graduate in a week.
Right.
And I'm walking by, and I pass him, and I was like, holy shit, that's Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
And then I walked back, and I was like, hey, man, you're Chappelle, right? Like, yeah, you even say dumb shit, yep, you know, when you're like, and he goes, yeah, and I go, you got a couple of minutes? He's like, nah, not really, man, I'm kind of busy. He was talking to a friend, mm-hmm. Very understandable. And I go, well, I'm a comic, and I'm trying to, like, figure, and he perked up a little bit. Then we had 3 or 4 minutes of, and I was like, I'm about to graduate here from school. Like, do I stay in D.C.? Do I go to New York? Do I go to L.A.? And he goes, fuck L.A. That shit sucks. Like, he hates Hollywood, right? He's very anti-Hollywood. I think that's probably pretty well known amongst, you know, whatever. And then he goes, go to New York, get on stage as much as you can. And I'd already heard that from other comics in general.
Yeah.
But I took this as kind of like a sign from, you know, the world does things happen to you in life, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, dude, I'm about to graduate in a week. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm walking. And if he was two blocks over, couldn't have touched him.
Right.
There'd been 500 people around him.
Yeah.
I happen to just walk down past the biggest comedy star on the planet and go, what do I do? I'm like, what do I do? Chappelle, what do I do? Yeah. I take that as a sign from God or whatever, universe, light, however, whatever it means to you, if you believe in those kind of things.
Yeah.
You don't have to. Everybody's got their, you know. But for me, I take that as a very direct sign. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's fucking pretty badass. And then I graduated and I went home to Georgia for 1 week. And then I bought a one-way ticket to New York. I knew a couple people who were moving here from college. I had one or two other people I kind of vaguely knew. Mm-hmm. Here's a great little thing, too. I basically, Abby Crutchfield went to the same college as me, another comedian.
Yeah.
I kind of vaguely knew her. She was ahead of me by a couple years. And I was like, hey, I'm coming to New York. Can I maybe like sleep on your floor or couch? And I did that with a couple people. Can I sleep on your floor a couple weeks or a couple days to figure it out? And then she goes, not with me, but you can stay with my boyfriend, who's Luke Thayer.
Yeah.
And so I basically arrived to New York with one suitcase. I have no job. I have no place to live. I just have a big-ass suitcase with all the shit I can jam in there. I fly to New York, one-way ticket. And I basically, Luke was working a job at the time. He came, I never met the guy.
Yeah.
I dropped midday. It's like 3 p.m. He comes down from where he's working, grabs my suitcase, and like takes it back up to his work until he gets off that particular job he was doing at the time.
Wow.
And now I'm just walking around New York. I've just given my stuff to a random guy who I don't know, with no job, no place to live. And then from there, I stay with him, I think, for a couple. He was the first one. Yeah, upon arriving in New York, I stayed with him that night. I probably stayed with him for about a week. He had a blow-up air mattress or whatever. It's great accommodations for, awesome when you first move here.
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
Unless it leaks.
Yeah, right. But it was actually a good one. And then I stayed with him for like a week. And then I stayed with like another friend I'd gone to school with. I stayed on his couch for a little bit. And the whole time I'm just looking for an apartment. That's all I'm doing. Every day I'm just hitting Craigslist. You're looking apart. You're doing playing that game.
Yeah.
Found an apartment in New York after like 2-3 weeks, moving there. Next day, immediately, I'd worked at a comedy club in D.C., the D.C. Improv, as a doorman, just seating people.
Yeah.
So then when I got to New York, I went to every comedy club with a resume. I'll clean your bathrooms. I just want to be around comedy as I was in D.C.
Right.
Ended up getting a job at Caroline's in the box office, $8 an hour, whatever it was at the time. I don't know. It's like a young college kid job.
Yeah, but you get to see all these comics.
It's the best place you can be. It's a phenomenal opportunity. So now I have an apartment in New York, and I have a job in New York, and I'm also temping. So I only did the box office a couple days a week. The other times of the day, I was temping at places. Right. All these date entry, all the things you do when you move here. So literally, and I just from there slowly, and I literally texted Luke today. Luke's one of my best friends in New York. Basically I came here on, as a lot of us do, with nothing. No opportunities, no nothing. I didn't really know anyone here, no foot in the doors anywhere, stuff like that.
That's amazing.
And now look, I've arrived.
Yeah.
You made it here. On the Gary Hour.
So you got to, working at the DC Improv, you must have gotten good experience just watching great comics.
Oh, amazing. So
and touring comics that aren't from DC.
Yeah, because headliner shows. So here's what I would do there. I would take tickets like Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we take tickets, it's a 2-hour shift. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was $8 an hour. Maybe I'm getting whatever. This is years ago before minimum, all that wage. Like, and when you're a college kid, it's a great job.
Yeah.
I think it was a 2-hour shift. I think it was $8 an hour, maybe.
Hey, that's $16 a shift.
But my class would end at like, I'd have to take a cab to work. And then it would be so late, I have to finish my homework because I'd get up before class.
Right.
So I'd take a cab to work and home. I would lose like $10 or $12 every shift I worked. But I went because I would just watch the show.
Right.
I literally went and I was just around comedy. And I would see people for 2 hours. I'm getting to know people, the staff, other comics from D.C. that are big comics, And then I'd watch the headliner for free.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a young comic, that's an invaluable experience. Go ahead.
Who were the ones that left the biggest impression on you?
The one that really hit me the hardest, I saw, and it's still early on, I've only been doing stand-up, 4 months to whatever, I saw Ron White. It was kind of the first time I saw sold-out room,
mm-hmm.
And he was huge. He's coming off that, Jeff Fox, all that tour stuff. He was, he's still huge, but he was hot, like real hot.
Right, that buzz.
And I remember standing in the back, and the place was sold out, and people were just bowled over laughing. I'd never seen it like that. I did not laugh once. I stood in the very back with my eyes open and my mouth completely hanging open. I was like, I just couldn't believe what I was watching.
Right.
That one person was doing this. I did not laugh. I literally was just astonished at like the whole thing.
It's such an amazing thing to see.
It's unreal. It's unreal. When
When one person can just have a room just roaring. It's like
it doesn't
popcorn.
Make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's like magic. It's like seeing someone cut in half. You're like, I don't know what I just saw. I'm blown. I have to leave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it always makes me feel like when a crowd is like really laughing hard, I feel like I'm inside of a popcorn container.
Yeah.
In the microwave. It's like,
it doesn't make sense. Yeah, it makes no sense when that happens.
It's amazing. So that's really good experience.
The best.
Yeah.
The best.
So you moved to New York. You got a gig, got a job at Caroline's.
I'm temping during the day, working at Caroline's a couple of days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some off days of the temp job. And then at nighttime, same thing. Now I'm at Caroline's watching shows. And now I'm also, I've gotten to know the staff at Caroline's. I'm now performing at Caroline's on all the new talent shows, on some of the showcase shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on shows with, it's a bringer type situation where there's new comics like myself. And then there's also pros on. So I'm starting to meet some of these comics. They're like...
So you did a couple bringers. at first.
I didn't bring anybody, though, because I worked at the club, so they just throw me up for 5 minutes. They just kind of put me on the show.
Nice.
Kick ass. And these had 200 people in them, 250 people, and I'm at Caroline's. I'm 21, 20, I'm 22 at this point. I've been doing stand-up a year. I'm 22.
You've probably seen before the footage of the legendary comics with the Caroline's behind them.
All that shit. And I'm performing at Caroline's a lot. I'm performing at Caroline's like kind of twice a night, like 4 days a week.
Wow.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Or Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it was. I was performing at Caroline's like 6-8 times a week.
Great stage experience.
Could not be. 200 people in the crowd. Sometimes 300. They were selling out these new talent
That's
shows.
That's a big room.
And like I'm a new, and I would literally, then I would do, this is where OCD gets you, like where it helps you in a way. My thought process was, if I do this more than everybody else, I'll be better than everybody. The repetition, the more I do it. So I would do a new talent show at Caroline's at 7. Then I would jump in a cab, run down to an open mic somewhere, and they would let me get on usually pretty quick because I'd come from Caroline's. You get to know people, like, yeah. Oh, he's got to go. And because I had to go back to Caroline's for the 9 o'clock show. So I'd take a cab back to Caroline's for the 9 o'clock, the new talent show. And then I would go take a cab from there to another open mic somewhere. So I would do two Caroline, like on a Monday, I would do two Caroline spots, and I would run down and do two open mics somewhere else. And I just racked up my credit card because my thought was I'm investing in myself. I'm about to be 35 in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I still am paying off that credit card stuff. I'm still accumulating credit card debt and paying off from when I did all that.
Kudos to you for investing in yourself. A lot of people wouldn't even do that.
Because you have to have the belief that you're gonna do it. Like I did a podcast recently. Well, I shouldn't say recently, but I did a podcast one time, and someone goes, "What do you want to do in this business?" And I go, "I'm gonna headline theaters," and they started laughing at me. And I was like, "I'm gonna headline theaters. You watch. I'm gonna headline theaters." And I'm now in the past 6 months a year, like I headline places.
Yeah,
I legit headline. I toured all over the country. Like not huge rooms. Not a couple of them had 150 people, 200. But I headline rooms.
Yeah,
I've been headlining the last like 3-4 years on and off. But the last 6 months or a year, I've been headlining a fair amount. Like I'm on my way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have this belief that like it's not about being cocky. It's not about having a big ego. It's like you have to have a belief like I'm gonna do this. I will headline theaters. I will be the guy you pay on a Saturday night to buy a ticket a month out. You're excited and you want to see that, and you're going to go see me perform. That is what's happening.
Yeah, a lot of people are like waiting around for someone else to invest in them.
Yeah, or they're like, "Oh, you don't make money in comedy. You don't like you make a lot of money in comedy at listen, the base levels, no. But when the people who make money, you don't think, I mean, you can name drop, you know, Kevin Hart. I mean, now I'm naming the biggest stars on the planet. But there's a lot of people who are not famous that you never heard of who are making fucking $250,000 a year, $300,000 a year.
Yeah.
A couple of these people are making like $1-2 million. They're not famous. They've just got a couple of TV spots. They're touring. They're doing their thing. They're maybe doing something on Sirius. They're fucking making money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's possible.
Yeah, because there's other areas that you branch out to.
100%. Acting, all that shit.
And you're doing a lot of that now.
A fair amount, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been the host of 3 podcasts. I go on commercial auditions all the time. Some bit acting things and whatnot.
You're doing this Man on the Street.
Man on the Street stuff for CNBC. Little video projects. I did stuff for Condé Nast, CNBC. You know, video projects that you get paid to do. Some pay better than others, but you know.
Yeah, reading your bio, there's like every network mentioned that you... every network there is mentioned that you've worked for, it seems.
I've done some shit for, you know, for a bunch of different... I shouldn't say shit, but like, you know, different, you know...
Stuff?
Bit parts, hosting thing, you know. I'm constantly doing that. That's what you have to do. That only helps you build your brand, build your, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So you started to get on your feet in New York. Your own apartment, your own... You're working.
Yeah.
And now it's been, what, 13 years later?
12 years in New York.
12 years in New York, right?
Yeah.
So you're supporting yourself with your art.
Yeah, I squeak by every month. Mm-hmm. I'll be 35 and I squeak by. And then when I can't squeak by, it goes on my credit card.
Yeah.
When I start looking at like, well, I got to pay rent in a month or two, I pretty much live off my credit card. And some months I pay more on it than I've rolled over credit cards onto no interest for like 18 months or 12 months.
Transfers.
And then when that comes around, I got to deal with that. Like, yeah, it's been a fucking real nightmare of like figuring, but I somehow squeak by because I do financially with, like, you know, if you book a commercial, like I booked a commercial recently. I'm not going to say anything about it because I don't know if I booked a commercial recently, hasn't aired and it was supposed to air.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the heartbreaking thing about entertainment.
It will
air. You can't
celebrate
your things until like it whatever. Already happens.
But I'm getting, and I'm a member of SAG. I had to join because I've booked a couple commercials now. I've become a must join. But I'm getting, because it hasn't aired yet, and it's going to air. I believe it's going to air. But I keep getting holding checks for doing nothing. The SAG minimum of, anyway, this is very standard information. I'm not saying anything that like, but I get a check and it goes through my agent and then it comes to me. So all the taxes are out and all the agency fee. I get a check every 13 weeks for 500 and is it $53, something like that? It's, you can look it up online. It's a very public knowledge.
Yeah.
That's just what SAG, the thing is. So I'm like, I'm just getting every 13 weeks. Not that that's a lot of money when you do that math, because that's every 4 months, three months.
Three, so it's three not months,
like,
yeah.
But it's like, hey, when you get a random check for almost $600, like, well, this doesn't hurt me here.
Yeah.
Then if I can make another $800 on stand-up during that month,
yeah.
And then if I do one or two weird kind of acting things, or maybe, you know, you're not supposed to do things if you're in SAG, but like everyone fucking does it because you're killed otherwise.
I mean, you're living in New York, supporting yourself with your art, and you drove here. You have a car. You've like, you're like a millionaire. You're like a New York millionaire.
Yeah, I have access. I'm not gonna say I have access to a car for a little while. I'm not gonna. It's not my car. I'll just say I have access to a car.
Oh well, that's, then it's good you're checking under, make sure.
Yeah,
no one's,
yeah, yeah. I have access to a car at the moment. We'll just say that. I don't own a car. I don't have a car.
Okay.
I just happen to have access to a car, and that's New York. You get in these weird situations where you just happen to get access to an apartment or a car, or a, you know,
right.
Weird things happen in New York.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the point in the months that I might fall short, I start dumping, I pretty much pay everything on my credit card. So then all I got to do is kind of like make my rent and then my credit card just racks up. And literally I've had credit card debt since I moved to New York. And some I've gotten it down almost to pay, you know, close to paying off.
Yeah.
And I've been fucking in scary zones. And right now I'm kind of hovering in a medium zone.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of it. I also need to start bringing it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you do your own booking. You book some road shows.
Yeah. As far as stand up goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had some pseudo managers that, you know, and there's different booking people on the road that will book me on one nighters and stuff like that. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's the next step? Like, what do you do?
I'm all about a following now. I've done every hot show you're supposed to do in this city. I ran, and I'm not like one of the hottest shows in this city for many years. And people, it's very public knowledge. The show we ran, the Gandhi show, I've done all the clubs at one point. Literally every club I've done, I've been in it some years and in it other places. You know,
well, for any comics listening or people that want to do comedy, I mean, I feel like a lot of comedians don't know what to do besides try to get on stage. But you can basically waste your life away doing the same open mic. You know, you have
yeah,
to like
yeah.
spread yourself around.
It's all about making your own thing at this point. Because I'll just say this, the entertainment business, it goes in waves, what it wants, what it needs, I'll be in 3 weeks, I'll be a 35-year-old balding straight white male.
Uh-huh.
No one's coming for me. I'm the last thing that people are picking out. People want a 21-year-old who's like, you know, MTV type stuff and like into like, you know, millennial types. I'm not that guy. No one is coming for me. No matter how many times I crush on stage, hey, it could happen. You never lose in the crowd. They need me for a role. But no one's coming for the mid-30s guy or the 42-year-old man. No one's coming for that person. Mm-hmm. They're coming for the 19-year-old who like can be put into VH1, MTV, can be on these shows. So it has to all come down to, and I'm not saying anything that, you know, this is just what the business is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like being an actor. Like,
you sure you're not reinforcing a negative thing?
How?
By saying no one's coming for me.
Oh,
no,
to myself.
To yourself.
No, but it's where I've arrived, because it's like, because when I'm on, I'm good. And I've crushed in front of a lot of things that like, oh, maybe something will happen here. Maybe you could have a show tonight, murder. You have the best set in the city. Doesn't fucking matter. You could also eat it harder than anybody. Doesn't also doesn't matter.
Right.
And after 13 years of doing this, what am I going to be, 47, still hoping someone finds me? Like, I do a show at whatever club and someone's like, finally, you're 47. We need you. And maybe.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's all about taking control yourself. And with the two, like just this podcast, you get it, right? With the, I don't know what your goals are, but like with the opportunities of the internet,
right.
YouTube, Instagram,
so
Twitter.
Make your own way.
100%. Because if you got a following, no one can fuck you.
Invest in yourself. Don't wait for someone else.
No one can fuck you. Like, right. Once, if you've got a million people who listen to, I don't know what the subscribership is. Mm-hmm. If you've got a million people listening to this, you're fucking rolling. All you gotta do is, hey, Gary here, I'm gonna be in Cleveland next to, boom, that shit sells out immediately, and you're making money on that tour. No one fucks you when you have your own following. That's the only game. Mm-hmm. At unless you're plucked, when you're one of the people who are plucked young, and there are people who are, and it's there are people who are plucked at the 21 year, and the people I started with, people, you know, are now superstars. They're worldwide famous, you know. If you're not plucked as you get older, you've got to create your own. Personally, that's where I'm at in my head.
That's your direction.
Yeah.
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 And this way you're your own boss. No one's deciding your own fate.
Yeah.
You're making your own thing.
Yeah, that's where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the Gandhi show, I thought I did it because that was the old model back in the day. I saw a lot of people do these kind of these shows, make them real good. Then they get web series out of them. Then they get TV shows, get good agents, good managers. I never got an agent. I never got a manager. I never got some people come see me here and there, but mainly they would, you know, people knew about the show, but it didn't turn into a web series, it didn't turn into a TV show. It's like, and that was I don't know how we could have done that show better personally. If you've been doing stand up in New York the last 10 years, you know of the show we put on.
Absolutely.
And it was damn good.
Yeah.
And I'll stand behind that. It was, you know, and I don't know how we could have put on a better show. There are shows that are as good, and there are phenomenal shows now, and there'll always be fun. But like, we put on a show that when it was rocking, I'll put it up against any show that was happening in this city. And I think I'm not saying anything that people.
Louis C.K. dropped into your show
multiple times.
Yeah.
Hannibal Buress. It doesn't matter who you name, they did it. The point is, like, when it was rolling, I'll put and I'm not being cocky. It's not an ego thing. It's like a stat, or it's like it was a good show.
Yeah.
It just was a good show.
So is that why you stopped doing it? You felt like it did everything it could do?
Yeah. Every agent came at one point. Every manager, every casting person, they all know about it. They all know. And it's like we left on a high note.
Yeah.
And it started to feel like an aging old man kind of. We're running going on year eight almost.
Uh-huh.
It started to just feel like we're folding chairs. The chairs are what did it, if you ask my co-producer.
Folding chairs at the end of the night.
Yeah. It's like 1 a.m. and like you're like, man, I can't believe I'm this old still folding these chairs doing this free show.
It's those little moments that they get you.
You know, at a certain point, you're like, dude, I need to do like the next thing.
Right.
So I'm kind of in the mode right now. I have some ideas. I'm kind of in my next mode now.
Man, I got that way after 3 years of doing my show. And I don't have to fold chairs.
Is probably better. 8 is absurd. It's fucking dumb. You know what I mean? But the show was so good, we had to keep it going because it's like, it was so good. I mean, you have to do anything, but like, why would you kill? Because it was fucking good. It just was.
Solid audience every week.
You know, the vibe was cool. It was fun. Every famous person did it that you needed like to do, you know.
Gary Levitt did it a couple
Gary
times.
Gary Levitt did it a couple times, you know. Yeah, so you had to make your own path. That's it. And that show, I'll say this, we created that show. That was something we did. And then from that, my reputation went up in the stand-up world. I got more spots. It was a place I could do 20-minute sets every week. Mm-hmm. I could build that there. Like, and that's something we did. That was the best thing I ever did in comedy, hands down, for what it led me to, what I learned, what I got out of it. Hands down, the best thing I ever did.
That's kind of the best advice for someone starting stand-up is to start your own show.
Yeah, it's a good way. Yeah, it's one of the ways, you know? Yeah, I it was but the point is, and you want to know how that started for me personally?
Mm-hmm.
Brendan, who I co-run, he has his own reasons and he's a person with his
Brendan
own
Fitzgibbons.
Views. I don't want to speak for him. I did that show because I started going the road about 10 years ago. I started getting some road work when I was 2-3 years in, you know, hosting, featuring, whatever. I started doing some road work. And would fly somewhere, drive somewhere, lose a ton of money. And then there would be some of these one-nighters. And whoever would run the show, a lot of times like a greasy dude who's like, he would treat the comics terrible.
Uh-huh.
He would make like $4,000 on the night. You just start doing the math.
Right.
He would make a ton of money. And I worked at two comedy clubs, so I kind of know the math and how things, I know what drinks are costing, what I kind of, I you know, I've been on the inside of a couple comedy clubs to see things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I'm getting $100. And then the guy didn't give a fuck about comedy.
Right.
Like, he cares about money in the seats, or like, he would treat the comics terrible. And I had a couple really bad experiences on the road. It like really pissed me off. And I go, and I'd been at Caroline's a lot. So for me, I was like, I know a lot of big comics from being at Caroline's. I also like want to do some shit right. And so I was like, I think I can run this better than I'm not speaking for Brendan, I'm speaking for myself.
Yeah.
I was like, I can put on a show better than these people. Fuck these people on the road. And then when you're young, you're also not getting club, other than Caroline's, because I happen to have that in.
Right.
I wasn't really getting spots at all the other clubs. I'm 2 years in, I'm 3 years in, four right. years in, whatever. So, and then you go, fuck this. Now I'm going to create my own thing.
Yeah.
And then we ran that show, which I think a lot of, it was on Wednesday nights. It's better than a lot of shit in comedy clubs.
Absolutely.
So, and that has built my career up. So it's all about self doing it. It ran its course. Mm-hmm. We still have it monthly. We still travel with that brand, but it ran, it kind of ran, it did what it needed to do, like you say. And now right. I'm into my next phase. So, and I have other projects. I have other things that I'm brewing.
I think it's good to shake it up too, because you get rejuvenated.
Sorry, I've just been yelling for the whole time.
That's all right. Should we call your dad?
Oh, no. I'll pass on that one.
So you don't talk to him at all, huh?
No.
Not at all?
Yeah, no. I've had some interaction throughout the year, but in general, no.
Has he ever seen you do stand-up?
No. My mom's never seen me. I talk to my mom every day.
Why isn't she?
She just doesn't. I don't know. She lives far away, so the opportunities are not really there.
Well, she comes visits. She comes to visit.
Yeah, but it's still just not a thing we do. It's like my thing that I do, you uh-huh. know, which is,
do you think
she cool.
would just not understand it?
No, my mom would get it. She would get it. It's just not. Yeah.
Can you make her laugh?
Oh, of course. Yeah. 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 I'm cool with it. Everything's yeah. She just doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm totally cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's your thing.
Yeah.
Nice. So what's next?
I have a show tonight.
Mm-hmm. You have shows all the time. People should check out your website.
This is my new thing. This is one of my new. I started realizing, this will end. It sounds like we're at the end. I don't know. Like you're saying, how can you know? I perform 13 years, mm-hmm. right? My career is so. You know, some things are better than others. Whatever. But I'm good at what I do.
But also, you should keep in mind that your career can change overnight.
At a split second.
Somebody, yeah. some huge comic can take you on the road and then boom.
Yeah.
But you can explode at any, that's the great thing about being an artist.
Sure.
If your art is out there.
Sure.
Overnight, you could wake up in the morning with an email that is life changing.
Yeah, which I've been waiting on for 13 years.
Hey,
it could happen.
Yeah.
But my new thing now is I perform every night. My name is Lance Weiss. So if people after a show, how many times do we perform? There's 20 people in the crowd, 50 people in the crowd, and no one knows who the fuck you are. You crush, but you're one of 9 comics, right. of 12 comics. They don't know you went 6. Nobody knows who you are.
Right.
You did a great job. They can't follow you. They don't know anything about you. They don't know where you are. My name is Lance Weiss. Even if you happen to know my name, how do you spell Weiss?
Right.
What is it? Something else comes up. How do you fucking find me? It's impossible. And people in comedy clubs are
maybe
drunk.
You should stop mispronouncing and just say it's Weiss.
Could be Weiss. People in comedy clubs are drunk a lot of times. There's an alcohol minimum or food item minimum. They're drunk, they're tired, they're on their phone, they're not paying attention. So now, as one of my things, you tell me what's next, I've rebranded everything I own on my website. Now it redirects here, my Snapchat, my Instagram, my Twitter, my YouTube channel, everything is just, I'm now Party with Lance everywhere.
Right.
You can't fuck that up. If I do it in my set now. You can find me a party. I have a little joke around it. I built a little joke around it.
Yeah.
Party with Lance. You can't mishear what I'm saying.
Right.
You can't misspell what I'm saying. You can't fuck that up. And it's kind of a fun, positive, no matter what
it's branding.
Yeah. And for when I tour, let's say I'm doing a theater. I remember I went to like Sebastian Maniscalco. My buddy opens for him, so I went like to hang out.
Yeah.
They had like these big jumbotron. I've been a lot, you know, throughout my years, gotten to go to a number of different things. They had a jumbotron, and it was like Sebastian Live or whatever, hashtag Sebastian Live. And I was like, dude, when I tour, anything I do is just Party with Lance now.
Right.
You want to, if I start my own podcast, like, dude, you want to hang out? You want to party with Lance on the podcast? Like,
perfect.
You want to do a YouTube channel? Like, come party with me on my channel. You want to come see me live? Come party with me on Saturday night. I'm going to be at this theater. I'm going to be at this place. So it literally, I just a lot of thought that when I'd spent 2 weeks thinking of this handle and it's not a negative. It has a little bit of a fun vibe. Partying can be anything. You and me, I want to go eat lunch right now. Dude, we're having a fucking party. We're eating lunch. We're eating tacos. This is kick ass. You know what I mean? Anything can be a party. Like my, you know, ice cream with my nieces is a party. Anything so it can live as a handle and also as a hashtag. So if I'm like eating ice cream.
These are skills you learn when you self-promote. So basically what you're doing is branding.
Yeah.
Right. That's branding. Something that'll stick with people. Like,
yeah.
My name is Gary Levitt. That's
sure.
whatever.
Yeah.
But on social media, I'm Gary Levitt. My
name is
Gary Levitt. Gary Gary Levitt.
Yeah. So
for some reason,
it.
Gary Levitt
yeah.
is more memorable than Gary Levitt.
Yeah. You're saying it twice. Yeah.
So, but that branding can lend itself to so many different industries.
I can go anywhere with that. Anything I do. And I started thinking about like people that I like.
But now you're a branding expert is what I'm saying. Like you could work for Shell. He'd be like, hey, Shell Oil, I'm going to help your brand. We're going to party with Shell.
Perhaps, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
you don't want to give him your brand, but...
Yeah, yeah. I would do more like, you know, party with, like, Shell...
Shoot the shit with Shell.
Shell is parting with Lance or something right. like that. You'd somehow brand it with, like...
Co-brand.
Yeah, so it's like, party with Lance, party with Shell. Like, something like, you know...
Yeah. But what I'm saying is these are skills that...
Sure.
You know, go beyond stand-up comedy and just... They're just... life skills that were learned along the way.
Yeah. But the point is I've taken it into my own control. Now literally I have all these things I'm about to do here in the next few months. I'm currently in the process of moving, but once I have all these things, and party with Lance is my whole, literally I went on the road recently a couple times and I made some flyers and they were all party with Lance on the road. I'm going to be here. Like it literally, it's my, I'm super excited about it, but it's what you say. What's next? Just party with Lance. You'll find all my shit. No matter what platform you're on, party with Lance. You'll find me.
Right.
And there you go.
So, for any listeners,
yeah,
party with Lance.
Party with Lance. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Let's go grab some lunch and party with Lance.
I'm starving, actually.
All right.
Sweet.
Thanks,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.